Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast, From Globalization to Emerging Markets, A Classic Look at the Marketing Discipline. I'm your host, Nancy Piccalo, Senior Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Dr. Jack Deschef, who is a Charles H. Kalstad Professor of Marketing at the Glizetta Business School of Emory University. Prior to his present position, Dr. Schess was at the University of Southern California, at the University of Illinois, and the faculty of Columbia University, as well as the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Dr. Schess is well known for his scholarly contributions in consumer behavior, relationship marketing, competitive strategy, and geopolitical analysis. Dr. Schess has been recognized for his scholarly contributions with numerous awards, including the Outstanding Marketing Educator Award by the Academy of Marketing Science, the Outstanding Marketing Educator Award by the Sales and Marketing Executives International, and he's also the recipient of a number of AMA awards, including the 1992 PD Converse Award, the Richard D. Irwin Distinguished Marketing Educator, and the Charles Coolidge Parlin Awards that were presented to him in 2004. Dr. Schess, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Nancy.
Dr. Schess, I want to start out today by talking a little bit about a topic that seems to be definitely on the minds of a lot of marketers today, which is emerging markets. The focus in the marketing discipline is definitely being placed there, and I'm wondering if you could share with us a little bit about why you believe this is a focus right now, what's driving it, and what is the call to action for both marketing academics and practitioners?
There are three reasons why the focus for all companies, and especially consumer packaged goods companies, is shifting toward emerging markets. The first and the main reason is all advanced countries are aging and aging very rapidly. No demographer had ever forecasted the speed with which the aging will take place, as well as the magnitude of aging. For example, in Japan, every month there are fewer men living in Japan than last month, and there is nothing they can do. And Japan, as you know, is the second largest economy in the world, or used to be. China has just taken that over. Similar data are also now we find from Germany. Germany has a zero population growth. Japan has a declining population growth. And we find the same situation now in the U.S., even though we had a massive immigration in the 90s, for example, if you look at the birth numbers, it is only 1.6 children per woman, whereas you need a normal 2.1 children to replace the population. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of timing before it also comes on the shores of the United States. Mm-hmm. The aging is the key driver where the growth will come less from advanced economies and more from emerging economies. So that's one key factor. Second factor is the growth of emerging economies themselves. Most of the emerging economies, and especially ex-communist countries, are all becoming more and more market-driven, competition-driven, by liberalizing their whole policy through economic reforms. In other words, rather than having a regulated economy, they are encouraging more and more competition, inviting more foreign direct investment into their countries to create economic growth. So you see the rise of countries like China, India, Brazil, to some extent Russia, but also Indonesia, Turkey, any large population-based emerging economy going through economic reforms is creating significant opportunities. And the last and probably equally important factor has to do with the rise of the new middle class among these emerging economies. As they transition from the agricultural economy, they all want to be modern, brand-conscious consumers, and that is where marketers from Western economies, especially from the United States, where we have experienced all this last century, we have the competencies actually to market into emerging economies to take advantage of these first-time buyers of everything, from appliances to cellular telephones to automobiles to branded packaged goods, consumer products, it just goes on, mm-hmm. and therefore the shift is taking place from advanced to emerging economies.
And so what is the impact of these three very critical trends on academics and practitioners, Russ?
There are two or three key impacts, especially on the practitioner side, and then I'll come to the academic side. The first key impact is that the emerging economies, which were mostly ex-colonies, were in the periphery of the business plans for all large, what is generally called multinationals. Examples would be Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, McDonald's of the world, Starbucks, any example we can take. Today, emerging markets are becoming the center of their planning and center of what they should be doing. That's clearly one key factor, that when a market goes from peripheral to a central market or a core market, we have to change all of the marketing mix and the way we do marketing into these countries. That's clearly one practice change. Second major practice change has to do that we always learned to innovate, commercialize in America, let's say, and then we say, let's see if we have market abroad, more like an export orientation, or if we had to make it there or sell it there, can we localize the brand, can we localize the product, the functions, the features? This is called localization. In other words, how do you localize a global product designed for Western markets? That model is now coming to a screeching halt, and more companies are learning that you need to innovate in those emerging markets,
right,
compete there successfully against surprisingly unorganized sector, unbranded products, and make them affordable, make them accessible, and then bring them into advanced countries. This is called reverse innovation, and that's a massive shift in the mindset of most managers.
Wow. Well, that certainly offers a lot of opportunity for North American marketers and companies.
Absolutely. In fact, my view is that this is the future of all North American marketers, whether you are in consumer packaged goods industries or durable appliances, consumer electronics, and as a consequence, all of the industrial component and raw materials.
Well, that's good news for us on,
yes.
on the North American side. And what about academics? How are they going to be impacted, you think, from this trend?
In the academic side, we see probably, again, two to three very different impacts. Our theories on which we have prevailing beliefs, very strongly researched, are now becoming obsolete mm-hmm. because they were organized by the context of advanced economies, the way the family structure, for example, the way the distribution structure was organized here. We have to set aside those theories and think differently. Here are two, three quick examples, Nancy. We always prided in marketing that the real competitive advantage is to create a differential advantage. How do I differentiate myself? We have an old saying in marketing called unique selling proposition or USP. We do branding from that viewpoint, segmentation, targeting, packaging, as well as advertising campaigns. USP has been a core concept among the academics. Now that concept is thrown out to primarily the concept of market aggregation. In other words, how do these emerging markets, which are very heterogeneous, surprisingly, both in demand, the diversity is massive, as well as in the supply function, there are just too many fragmented competitors, mostly unbranded, unorganized products. So how do you standardize and aggregate them into a large market?
Mm-hmm.
This sounds so radical from a theoretical viewpoint, but we have seen this happen in America by a company that nobody believed could become a big retailer from small towns called Walmart. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, absolutely.
And Sam Walton was always asked, how can you compete against world-class in those days companies like Sears, that was undisputed leader, or Kmart, that was a very successful challenger to Sears? And his answer was, hit them where they ain't. That's fascinating. We say, look, these small towns have a demand. Each town demand will be too small, but if I aggregate together, I can become the largest retailer, and I get the procurement power over all of the manufacturers. And that's exactly what happened. This you simply magnify by, let's say, 5 times to 10 times, given the size of China, given the size of India. And that's a key paradigm shift in marketing thinking and among the academics.
Well, that's certainly a lot of food for thought for our academic community, that's for sure. You know, we want to talk a little bit, too, about globalization in general. We've already started talking about that earlier, but what do you think companies should be concerned with as they try and they continue to grow globally?
Globalization is inevitable. I think the genie is out of the bottle, or cat is out of the bag, as the saying goes. I don't think any nation can go back to the days of protectionism that we experienced, let's say, all through the colonial expansion and World War II growth primarily. Permanent structural changes are made, such as the old tariff regime called GATT, G-A-T-T, is given way to WTO, World Trade Organization. All nations agree that trade is the mechanism for growth, and trade encourages globalization, which means you can make products one place and sell it some other place, and the markets compete on a global basis rather than on a national or a local basis. So globalization clearly is the future. Here are the 4 debates that are taking place in globalization, and fortunately we have classic literature. 35, 40 years ago we had the same debate, which are coming back, and therefore, if you go back into the old literature, both in marketing practice as well as in the academics, we can learn quite a lot about what happened then and is something relevant today. So here is the first major debate. Should the brands be global or local? You know, at the corporate brand levels like IBM, HP, etc., or even Starbucks for that matter, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, they're all corporate brands, not product brands. The debate is just not there anymore. Yes, you can take your corporation worldwide with the same corporate brand name as it is true in most B2B markets, business-to-business markets. But the debate still rages on, is it possible to take a global brand, let's say American brand, and take it all over the world under the same name, such as Tide detergent, or Pantene shampoo for Procter & Gamble, or Coca-Cola brands worldwide. This debate still rages on. Should we have a local brand basically owned by the same parent company? In other words, should we have brands by region or local, Latin American brand, African brand, Indian brand, Chinese brand, or should we have one master brand all over the world? And that debate is still going on, especially in consumer packaged goods industries. So that's clearly one that our old literature can be very valuable. Second area, which is equally important, is the country of origin effects. You know, we have a lot of literature that talked about that when a label is made in Japan in those days or made in Taiwan, we used to laugh at these people. The Japanese products were considered inferior in quality. They were lower priced. Well, the same phenomenon today is true about made in China. And in IT services, basically on the services side, about made in India. The Indian IT professionals came at a low price point doing sort of a basic work in call centers, in what's called BPOs, as well as in IT services. But they are now becoming world-class brands at the same time. So what is the impact of a country of origin? That's fascinating, Nancy, right?
That's an absolutely great point, absolutely.
So we are still going through that process to learn whether country of origin effect is equally important today as it used to be before. So that's the second major area of globalization and its impact in terms of marketing practice. The third one is why products succeed or flourish in one place and absolutely flounder or fail in other markets. We still don't know. most of the new product introductions in foreign countries often do not succeed well. The failures are much greater than successes. So we are trying to figure out, is it due to cultural differences, as we have talked about? But if the globalization is taking place, there should be less cultural differences. In fact, just to detour slightly, Nancy, you might remember Rudyard Kipling, remember?
Yes.
Who had a famous saying, East is East, West is West,
right.
And the twain shall never meet or something like that.
Right.
I have concluded he's dead wrong. He's not only dead, but he's wrong also. Because have you seen the westernization of all the Asian children in China and India? They are just like their cousins here.
Right.
Both in lifestyles, in preference for music, in preference for, you know, products and services in general, even in basic values as family unit, for example. Well, now we see Easternization of the world taking place. Begins with fusion in entertainment, like the Slumdog Millionaire movie, for example, which won all the academic awards. We see fusion in music clearly, and fusion in cuisines. Have you seen the cuisine fusion? It's absolutely mind-boggling.
Oh, yes. Fascinating.
You see? So we think marketing practice has to learn the concept of fusion. It's not this or that, but how do you blend it together?
Right.
And that gives you a very different mix of marketing or marketing recipe. So this is a third area that we are struggling primarily. Why products fail there and succeed some other place? And do we have some theories or do we have some knowledge from practice about what lessons we can learn? So those are the issues of globalization right now.
Well, the more things change, the more things stay the same, it seems.
Exactly. Exactly. So true.
The last thing I just want to mention is you have founded a social enterprise called Marketing Classics Press,
right.
And you're currently partnering with the AMA to preserve and protect these classic works in the field of marketing.
Right.
Could you tell us a little bit about this mission and how you think contemporary academics can benefit from these works?
It's absolutely incredible to find that the younger generation of scholars who are doing their doctoral work and going to become future scholars in the discipline have no knowledge about what is in the literature like 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Now, over my career of 50 years now, 5 decades roughly, the best way for me to learn has been always to go back classic literature. At that time, we had no access to these except you wandered in the library. And you just learned, picked and choose. Books were out of print. They were not available, hard to reach. When you placed an order through a library, it'll take months to get you. Today, the world can be digitized. As I look at the AMA collection, to me, it's a gold mine of knowledge in the marketing literature. Not only the journal articles, but the books that AMA published have an enormous knowledge content. And knowledge generally is what we call recursive. Knowledge repeats itself in a newer context, but the ideas have originated hundreds of years, and in philosophy and other areas, thousands of years, actually. So given that, we need to go back to that knowledge base. And especially AMA books, and equally important, AMA proceedings, which are not digitized, if we could digitize them and make it accessible to the world, there is no better social cause in my mind. And therefore, the knowledge of the younger generation can be heavily impacted. Let me add one more thing, Nancy.
Sure.
And that is that, especially in emerging economies, which is the growth engine even for academics, I think the thirst for our knowledge is enormous because we have always led in the marketing discipline all over the world. We are sort of considered definitely the leaders, if not undisputed leaders. And therefore, our knowledge, they are very hungry, but it's not accessible because it's not digitized. And hence this Marketing Classics Press was created as an idea that American Marketing Association, AMA, and MCP, as the company is called, could be could partner together into a social venture?
Well, I think definitely that this library of classic work can certainly help inform contemporary, academics dealing with globalization and emerging markets and a whole host of other topics. So I think that's an absolutely great point that you made there. These have been really great insights about how globalization and the growth of emerging markets are impacting the marketing discipline. We've been talking to Dr. Jagdish Shet. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience. You can look for more information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcasts, and make sure you sign up for the RSS feed on Marketing Power so you're aware of all the podcast series available to you. To learn more about Marketing Classics Press, visit marketingclassicspress.com. Until next time, I've been your host, Nancy Pacala. Thanks for joining us.